scholarly organization, association, maybe it was Women in History, sponsored the exhibit, which meant, and they helped me write the proposal. I went to New York and worked on the proposal with the people from the national, the women's organization. And one of the first things that they had told me was that I needed a designer. I didn't know anything about it. Call the Jewish Museum. Recommended a young designer in Soho. And I called him, and he was interested in the Pittsburgh. It was a terrible November day snowstorm. It was quite wonderful. And the interesting thing is that this design was so good, he didn't make any money. He brought his prices down so low so that he could get the grant. And but it was good. And when I went to the Holocaust Museum, I was so thrilled to see that he would design what it
happened. Is that so right? Seems his name is.
I know, it's just right now. And anyway, and Bob Dickman produced, built the exhibit. He was in the display business, did big shows, big, and for industries. He was at what was then the Pittsburgh plant for art. Later on, it became the Carnegie Institute. Carnegie Mellon's Arts Exhibition place, and now it's empty. It's next to, it's on Craig Street. You see it everywhere, but it was rather new then. And there were artifacts, beautiful pieces of Jamaica. Jewish Museum of Europe came to Pittsburgh, and she evaluated it. So that was a different one. It was quite beautiful. It's a beautiful piece.
So the community then.
Right, and not only to me, but to history. I mean, when I started, I remember one of my uncles said, "You mean the government paid money for something like this?" But, and yes, that was just, you know, not. They would never do it today. I was just kind of lucky this was during the period. Culture. Diversity and multiculturalism and all of this.
This was one of the specifics we were asked to find out about this exhibit.
Okay. I'll be glad to give you a little brochure from we didn't produce a catalog because the Marjorie, the woman who is the president of the Research Institute, didn't think that they would give us money to do catalogs that we did. It was just simple. because it was at the gallery for a couple of months, maybe it was at the Historical Society for a couple of months. It was with Sean over the summer.
Why I'm an economist.
I really can't remember. Because you said as a child you had history.
Oh, I always took a lot of history. I never had a semester that I didn't have a history course, but I majored in economics. I loved it. I loved all the theoretical stuff.
Okay, then, you're going to have to fill me in a little bit as to how the rest of your career developed.
Well, if it developed, or if
it
just
developed. Otherwise, we wouldn't be sitting here.
After that, I got involved with people who participated in everything that was going to exhibit. Asked me to do individual projects, and I got sort of sidetracked into individual projects, and I did a biography of the son of the founder of Pittsburgh Institute. This was Jim Frank, is the descendant of William Frank.
He was the founder of the Jewish community.
He and a few others, but he was the one who stayed. His name was William Frank, and he came here in 1847 with his wife, Palmer, and a child. And the child, he had been a peddler, and they had a little store in stores in Ohio for several years, coming to the United States in 1840. And couple of friends, and they were all sort of settling in Pittsburgh. There were a few people settling in Pittsburgh. And his child died. So he and two other friends bought land for a cemetery. It's now a Troika Cemetery, which still belongs to Rivershead. They bought that land, and that was the first Jewish institution. That year they also had, there were enough Jews to have high holiday service. They had a fire hall downtown, and they advertised it in the Pittsburgh paper. So all the Jews in the city were invited to worship the high holidays and the vigil and fire hall. That was the beginning, and they organized a Seventh-day congregation, which broke up. And then in 1856, when there was argument about, there were now two ethnic groups by then, there were Polish and Jew and German, and so they had a conflict over who to hire to be the leader, and William Frank led the Germans out of that congregation and founded the Shrine. Which is the oldest existing congregation before and after the best of the best. So Jim asked me, and what this man had several sons, and one son was Isaac W. Frank, unusual in that he graduated from Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute as an engineer in 1876. And it was Jim's grandfather, and Jim wanted to do that. And that was a fascinating project, which I did with the help of the secretary of this I can look up all these ones. No, during the exhibit, so she and I worked. So when I say she and I didn't own a computer. Jim wanted it done as economically as possible. He was going to pay for the publishing, which would be officially come the publication of the Historical Society, but they were putting in more money. So I said, well, we'll just do it on the computer and then have it printed from that so there won't be any typesetting. So Marilyn and I did the whole thing on the computer at Pitt's old engineering hall. Neither one of us knew how to use a computer. So we did it there where we could ask for help every 5 minutes. And it came out pretty nice. It needed a designer, which it didn't have. But aside from that, it was fine. And that was a major project. That was actually my first book, because the women's study at that time had a report published, a big paperback, but it wasn't a book. This was real. And then after that, I think I got involved with some other historians. We organized a business and did institutional histories. During all these years, my daughter was very young.
Kathy, and I
was going back. She became just as I was starting the Women's Project. As a member, she took her to the office with me. I was working at the Historical Society. They gave me space. And we went from there over to Western Civic. So all these years that I'm doing that and the women's study exhibit, Frank book, this business, Kathy was very dry. She was in this city until 1982 when she became so sick. Wasn't showing any signs of getting better. Took her to more to Shepherd Pratt Hospital. So doing these smaller projects was fine because I was just leaving that. Remember how long that lasted? One of the other women just wouldn't do it. She said she didn't mind. She just didn't think she was going to be involved. She'd rather stay home and listen to opera on the radio. That's what she said. So I did these individual projects, and then I got involved with Jewish Residential Services. We got Kathy. Kathy was in Baltimore. Started, and I began to work practically full time. I've always had done some history. I've done, book reviews and there were several articles that came out and stuff published. My major interest in switch to a safe and place camp. Not the place. She had some terrible experiences. She came out of the hospital, sent her to the halfway house, threatened her to be half dying of a Jewish funeral. Christ, you're going to hell. She did that. That's just a dramatic example. Basically, reason I'm saying that is that in two of my families, we had very different experiences according to each family's abilities and ideas about these things. And I've often been very upset with the way they, different families handle things.
Well, Seymour's been wonderful. I mean, he and I. Wasn't here to support me, she would have. My sister, Seymour's sister, was his husband. The others, they were very supportive. Once they were exposed to seeing Kathy really sick, biological. No, it's a brain disease. Yeah, it's schizophrenia.
Could you describe the Jewish Residential Services, please?
It's an organization whose mission is to provide housing and social services to make a home for people with loss and with other disabilities, eventually other mental disabilities, and hopefully eventually physical disabilities as well. And the first project is now ongoing, very, very therapeutic and successful Leonard Stacy House. Why Leonard Stacy House? Because Jack Buncher was our angel in getting the largest amount of money possible to get the building, which is an old apartment building on Wendover Street in Squirrel Hill that was completely renovated into eight two-bedroom apartments with a downstairs room that has a big living room, dining room, and a kosher kitchen, and office space for the staff. People who live there have serious and persistent mental illness. They're the kind of people who, in years gone by, would have spent their lives in institutions. Medications that became available in the end of the 70s and the end of the 80s made it possible for them to live outside hospitals. And hospitals began to a policy that they called deinstitutionalization, which they discharged patients from hospitals to live with no resources and no place to go. That's why it's going to save 2/3 of the homeless people. So, and what we have in Pittsburgh and other cities, federations began to get phone calls from parents, siblings, children of people saying hospitals are going to discharge my institution and they'll keep my relative on the medical aid. Even what do you have? Where can we send them? Very difficult to have a home at home. Federation had nothing. This was happening all over the country. So in 1986, the General Assembly, which is the convention of nations, had this question of what to do for these people came up in the end. It was a pretty tough one to handle, so they published a mission statement which said it was the mission of each individual local federation to find out the needs in their community and enact to meet those needs. It could have been more general, but that's the way it
retained the board in Pittsburgh. They didn't want the board. Usually, what a board usually does with questions it doesn't want to answer, they send it over to the Women's Committee. Ruth Shackner at that point was the chair of the Women's Committee, and she had a new board member. She got involved, Kathy Hurwitz. She gave that job to her. Kathy, out of the blue, you know, completely without any background. But she took it seriously. She became a pro, and eventually found me and a few other people organized, and the Federation said, you know, you do it. So we came to the point of saying we needed to have a house, a building, a house, and a home. Eventually, the Federation approved our going out and doing it, but it had to be done completely independently of the Federation. We were not about to put the money into it, so that started the major project, raising all the funding, and doing the planning, and organizing. There were a lot of very, very hard work. Major help from the state of Pennsylvania through Ivan Aiken, who was very close. He knew the situation because being in the legislature, these questions had come up before, particularly Jewish families, religious, because there was no place, not one institution in the state of Pennsylvania. Stacy House is the Jack Buncher gave me a big gift, $200,000, and wanted to name it for him. He said, now he was very close with Forster and had been with Lynn and Stacy. And Tom Forster suggested that he had been with Lynn Stacy, who was the county commissioner and the judge, and he kept himself. He was blind and he was very committed, very committed. That was the first task, and then about a year and 2 years later, we started a supported apartment program. In other words, for people who did not need 24-hour care, but needed care and housing. And we rent apartments in Squirrel Hill for such individuals, and plan for summer, see him twice a day, social work, some once or twice a week. And they are also included in all the activities that Stacy has. Now we have a partnership with Action Housing. We got a really nice money from HUD to renovate an apartment building on the hallway. We have 12 individual apartments, and that should open. Sometime between the other night.
So just a day?
Yeah, just a day. And we're also planning a daytime activities, which would be the best possible. Because there are many, many people with mental disabilities. Even with families, with alone, can't work, or at most work, have a job in 2 hours a day. But live really isolated.
Is there places for people to be?
That's right. That's right. That's right. We can't even get the housing. This would be to a place to draw them and come to socialize. And also, because we're doing it with children's homes, maybe we have to provide vocational training. But for those who are up to it, train them, place them, tier job, first, pay job, whatever they're able to do.
With a set of dance rooms?
Yes, unfortunately, we've not had a second floor. We're going to start probably in space at Jesus. That's tight. The place that offers space. We have to have it is the Presbyterian Church on the corner of Rosemary. It's the big problem. Which could probably be done in South Virginia. But so what we've asked for in our code now, which we hopefully will be granted money for a pilot program in one of these venues, and once that proves itself to be valuable, we'll try to acquire it.
Do you feel that having more of these people in one place is better for them or just better financially? Do you feel that they're...
It depends on... No, I would certainly not want to have an institutional... No,
a place with
25 people would be very economical and financial. But no, that would then you'd be creating another institution.
That's what I was concerned about.
That's why the one we have, there are 8 people.
How, what are the requirements? I mean, 8 people, there must be a waiting list, yes?
Yeah.
How was the selection made as to who?
I mean, all that's written down in the policy. They have to have the diagnosis, and they have to be able to live according to some of the rules.
It's professional.
Yes.
Dr. Krause, did you have difficulty in, I'm in real estate, so I'm aware of how communities can be. Did you have any difficulty in obtaining the Wendover building at the time? Was there any problem for neighbors? Or?
Not in obtaining the building, and there was no zoning restriction because they're individual apartments. There was some neighborly concern we had in the neighborhood meeting.
Yeah.
It was fine. Whether it was fine or not, there was nothing legal to obtain, of course, there was no question. And the people, they were concerned about what possible problems that could be in the street. Of course, they haven't been. A couple of people helped. One in particular was too old to stay. So that it wasn't that she was disturbing the neighbors, but the things that she did show that she wasn't safe. So she had to go back to her sister's house. everybody possible out of a hospital, but sometimes people need it.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, and this is really, that's different. On 60 Minutes, they just had something where they refurbished an old apartment building for homeless people. Did you see that? And what it was, 300 people are now off the streets and living viable lives.
They're given professional